We're talking with Rat Scabies, the one-time drummer of The Damned. You have a new documentary out now. It's called The Damned, Don't You Wish We Were Dead. Its first screening in America was last March at South by Southwest in Austin. Won't you please tell us a bit more about that film?
Pretty much. It's a, you know, straight-ahead documentary about charting the band's beginnings, startings, middle bits, disputes, arguments, bitchings, and ends. You know, it's a, yeah, I like it. It's not something I particularly wanted to do, but the director convinced me that he was going to be telling the story about the people in the band as opposed to just the controversies, you know. So it kind of I think it's true, and it's sort of, it's true to life. It's not just a bunch of talking heads saying, you know, blowing smoke up our bottoms, saying, aren't they great?
In other words, it's a capsule history of the band.
Yeah, I think so. It's, I mean, when you consider the band's had pretty much a 40-year career, I think he's done a pretty good job in, you know, telling the story he has in the time that there is. Because really, you know, you could probably make 3 feature-length films about The Damned if you wanted to get everybody and everything involved.
Some would argue that even that's not enough.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it seemed like a lot longer for me.
You started out in a band called Masters of the Backside shortly before The Damned formed in 1976. Won't you tell us more about that?
It's such a an odd question, really, in a way, because that was just, it was kind of the beginnings. I'd met Malcolm McLaren at a club called Dingwalls in London one night, who'd heard about me playing with Mick Jones and Tony James and Brian James in a band called London SS. And Malcolm, I guess he liked the look of me or something, and then just said, turned up on my doorstep the following day with Chrissy Hind and Nick Kent, and said, I want you to be in a band with these two. So we kind of got, you know, we had a little rehearsal room we used to use. And so we went in there and didn't have a bass player, so I kind of dragged the captain in because I knew he had a bass guitar and an amp.
Captain Sensible.
Yeah. And that was the Masters of the Backside, really. With Dave Vanian as well, because I'd met Dave also through Malcolm. And Malcolm's idea was that there were going to be 2 singers, and one was Dave Vanian, who was very dark and mysterious and gothic and scary, and the other one was also called Dave, but I can't remember his surname. But he was like completely the opposite, this very sort of blonde, effeminate kind of guy. So the idea was that there were 2 opposites front in the band, and Chrissy was only going to play guitar. She didn't sing or anything like that then. And yeah, and that was kind of it, really. It didn't last very long.
Yeah, you didn't even have an album out.
No, it didn't get beyond a couple of rehearsals, really, if that much.
How did Masters of the Backside morph into The Damned?
Well, pretty much because I'd already met Brian doing the, you know, in London SS. And I just kind of, it was like he was my favourite bet, really. He was, you know, I kind of dug playing with him more than anyone else. So we decided to put the band together, and then when it came to who should we have as a singer, we were out one night, and Dave Vanian walked in, and Brian said, oh, I like the look of him, let's get him down. So we kind of did. The choice was either him or Sid Vicious.
I think you made the right choice.
Well, thank you. So, yeah, that was that.
You started out under the direction of Malcolm McLaren, but I take it you got away from then, got away from that when you started out as The Damned.
Well, kind of, I suppose. I mean, Malcolm and Bernie had decided that they were going to kind of start a scene. You know, they were going to start the punk scene in London. So they just were looking for what in the day was, you know, deemed as interesting people, which mainly meant if you weren't wearing flares or had a leather jacket and had short hair, you know, that kind of, or if you had an attitude that was different to, I don't know, I guess the rest of the world.
The Damned toured the UK with the Sex Pistols in 76. What was it like to share a stage with them?
They were funny. They were, you know, they were really good. But, you know, the politics kind of took over and we ended up only playing one show and then they fired us. And then we went straight on from that to open for Mark Bolan on his tour.
Ah, you opened for Mark Bolan?
Yeah. So we went from the Pistols to Bolan in, you know, in one easy step.
That's quite an act to precede.
Hmm. Yeah, but it was really good because we were both sort of trying to appeal to a different audience and playing to a different audience. So we did pretty good with the, you know, with the Bolan fans, and I think Mark kind of, you know, convinced a lot of punks that he was quite punk.
The Damned were the first UK punk band ever to release a single, 1976's New Rose, and the first to release an album, 77's Damned, 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 both on the fledgling Stiff Records label. Won't you please tell us how that came about?
We were playing at a festival in France called Mont de Masson, and Jake Riviera and Nick Lowe were on the bus and saw us play, and Jake just came straight up and said, did we want to make a record with Nick Lowe, you know, producing, and it would be New Rose. So it was, you know, really simple thing, you know, they just booked us a studio and we went and played. So, yeah, and I think Jake thought it was important that it was the first punk single, you know, and that to beat the Pistols and stuff, to have some vinyl out, made a big difference to something. I'm not sure what, but so yeah, it really was as easy as that. You know, we had no idea what we were doing. We just went in. We had certainly had no idea that, you know, all this time later that there'd even be an interest in it. You know, we figured maybe 3 months, 6 months, and then the bubble would burst.
Except that it didn't.
No. No, it's a tough old bubble, that one. Yeah.
The Damned were the first British punk band to tour America. In fact, the Damned were the first ones to play at CBGB's. How'd that come about?
I have no idea. Again, it was just Jake. I mean, CBGB's was the place everybody, you know, in England had heard about. We used to get punk magazine, come to a local record store where they used to buy imports, and they kind of were clued up on punk. So we'd go in there and we'd look at the latest copy of it and just look at photographs of the bands, because we, none of them had a record out at that time, so we used to have to guess what they sounded like. And so once, you know, the record came out and everything and it started gathering a bit of momentum, it was pretty, you know, I think pretty obvious just that we should go out there and play, and just for our own interest as much as anything, and also to see how the punk scene was, well, actually was in New York, rather than our interpretation of it through a magazine.
See for yourself. And how did it go?
It was a riot. I don't think we ever smashed up as much equipment as we did in those 4 days.
Okay, the Damned tried unsuccessfully to get Syd Barrett from Pink Floyd to produce the second album, Music for Pleasure. Won't you tell us more about that?
Well, it was, we wanted to make a psychedelic record, and we had a connection with Syd Barrett because he had, because of his, our publishers were the same people. So I'm just moving out here into the shade. And but Syd wasn't really very well at that point and wasn't really able to, you know, to do it. But we still wanted to make a psychedelic record, and we were kind of, through our publisher, we were given the opportunity to you know, make the second album with Nick Mason instead. Which, you know, I think Nick did a pretty good job on what there was at the time. I think, you know, we kind of maybe missed a little bit of drug-induced production. But apart from that, I think, you know, it kind of turned out okay. We've been trying to find the tapes to give it a remix, but they seem to have gone missing.
That's too bad.
Mm. Okay, yeah.
Joe Strummer and Mick Jones from The Clash made an uncredited appearance on your third album, The Damned's third album, Machine Gun Etiquette. You were actually recording the album in the same studios as The Clash were using to record London Calling. How did you meet and how did they end up on the record?
Well, we all knew each other from the early days anyway. It wasn't, you know, Mick and Joe, we were kind of always around. And like I said, one of the very first bands I was in, which must have been in 1975, London SS, Mick was the guitar player in, or one of the guitar players in. So it was, you know, these weren't strangers. And it happened at the studio that was kind of the best sounding place at the time. Was, I think it was called Wessex, was in London. And it used to have one big live studio where you'd put the tracks down. And then in the back it had a mix studio. So what we'd do is we'd go into the big live studio for the first kind of couple of weeks, lay all the drums and live stuff down, and then move into the back studio. So as we moved into the back studio, the Clash moved into the big one to start working on London Calling, and then, you know, kind of repeat the process. So we used to see them every day and stuff while they were doing that album. It was a good laugh. We drank beer, smoked spliffs, you know, all the usual stuff kids do when they're making a record. Played pool.
How did Joe Strummer and Mick Jones end up on your record?
I'm not sure what they did. I think we were doing some backing vocals and stuff and wanted people to stamp along and clap and shout or do something. So it wasn't. It was just hanging out, you know. It probably seems a bit funny today, but you know, it's just a bunch of people that were making a record that already knew each other that were just doing stuff. And it's like, yeah, we're doing some backing vocals and want to sing, you know, whatever.
You left The Damned for good in 1996. What happened?
I got fed up with I don't know how far I want to go on this, really, to be honest with you. Let's just say that some people's attitude to what the band were doing were making it very difficult to sustain the band. You know, so it was, I just felt like I'd had enough because we couldn't really move in any other direction. I don't know. I'm not sure about answering this question. Sorry.
It's okay. I'm
going to do something better.
Won't you please tell us more about your book, Rat Scabies and the Holy Grail, once described as the Da Vinci Code getting the punk rock treatment?
Absolutely. Well, I grew up with the Grail legends and open-mindedness sort of around me. I was very fortunate, you know, my parents were great researchers and lookers at alternatives, you know. And part of that involved the story of this small village in France in a place called Rennes-le-Château. It was a priest who became fabulously wealthy overnight kind of thing. And that story of the priest, Berenger Saunier was his name, was pretty much the source for the Da Vinci Code. So that was why they kind of put that connection on the cover. But really, the whole thing was I was on the Grail Trail, and everything in the book was kind of true. You know, I cut my hand and I couldn't play, I couldn't do anything. So the guy over the road used to come and help me out, making cups of tea and telling stories to each other. And I was, he got kind of interested in the story because I was writing a film script at the time about it. He got kind of interested in the story and started writing all the mad dish down. Because it's a very engaging topic, because there's so many unusual things that surround it, like secret societies and, you know, tunnels, treasure, gold, corruption, Nazis, flying saucers, you name it, Nephilim, you know, it's all kind of in there. And so it's a fascinating sort of place for so many different reasons. And it's a very beautiful place, so it's not difficult to go and just eat good food and drink wine. So this friend of mine who lived over the road started writing everything down, then sent it to a publisher and said, yes, we'd like that, please. And that was that.
What have you been doing recently, apart from the book and promoting the documentary?
I've been playing with an actress called Jane Horrocks. We've put a couple of songs down together, which I really enjoy, which is kind of very... we covered Joy Division's Isolation, but did a very kind of, you know, moody North of England sort of version of it. A bit less up-tempo than the original. And also a Morrissey song called Life's a Pigsty, which we kind of give... The band's got its own kind of sound thing. It's sort of, I don't know, semi-psychedelic. But I'm looking forward to doing some more stuff with her in the new year. And the other project I've been working on is a couple of guys called Chris Constantino, who was in Adam and the Ants, and Paul Fraser, who writes music with people like The Prodigy and stuff, and he plays guitar. So we've made a couple of albums with guest singers. You know, we did the first one in London, which kind of featured Neville Staple, T.B. Smith, you know, and Judy Nynon, people like that, that came in and sang for us on a song each. And then that had worked so well that we decided then we should do the same thing for the Japanese audience. So we made a record and then got a bunch of Japanese artists to appear on it, and then went over to Tokyo last week and did a show there just to kind of promote the record and just get on stage. So I was having the time of my life.
I can imagine. Which Japanese artist did you feature?
Oh, so many. People like Rocky Inoki, Hiru from the 5678, a guy called Jack who plays like traditional Japanese three-string instruments. You know, it was just kind of a lot of people. Dr. Mono. But it was really cool because they all turned up and they knew exactly what they were supposed to do, and they really, you know, they delivered the goods. It was great. And that's, you know, when you play for a long time, then, you know, when you, after quite a few years, you need people to work with that are kind of inspirational and are good at what they do, you know, and that keeps your enthusiasm up. So that was, yeah. So it was good for that, those reasons. It was great.
What are your plans for the future?
Let me see, what have I got going on? I'm going to do some more recording for the Jane Horrocks project. Then I'm taking a tour to Rennes-le-Château, you know, Beringer-Saunier's place on a kind of grail hunt, which is something I do every year. So we, you know, a bunch of people come along and I show them around the mysteries and the churches and the old castles and stuff like that. So I'm doing that in September. Then in the new year, I think the Jane Horrocks project is going to be doing, hopefully is going to be doing some live work. And I think we're, you know, which is going to be like working in theatres, because it's as much a dance and culture project as you know, it's not just a band going out and playing. There's kind of a storyline to it, which is, you know, and the whole thing's, you know, it's a nice step away from a group, if you know what I mean, just to go up and perform, hopefully, you know, which I think will be in the same venue with other people, you know, with dancers and stuff like that, who I've seen working out some of the routines already that are really, quite exceptional. So I'm kind of looking at that as my mainstay for next year.
Cool. Do you plan to release any records, CDs or DVDs in the near future?
No, not really. I've put a band together in England just as my own project called the 50-50s, which is pretty much stuff I've written and done, you know. But I have to say, you know, I kind of just like working with people that I like, rather than trying to have a career in show business. So there's not really any plans to release anything, but there is stuff in the pipeline that may see the light of day eventually.
Oh, older stuff.
Yeah, just stuff I've got around. But the stuff I'm doing with the 50-50s is all new, so that's... But there's some of the stuff that I did that I never really bothered to release before anyway, so I may put some of that out just for, you know, just for posterity, for the sake of it.
Where can people find out more about your upcoming tour and stuff?
I suppose the only place really is probably my Facebook page. I haven't really bothered to do a website.
And your Rat Scabies on Facebook.
Yeah.
Rat Scabies, thank you very much for granting me this interview.